Hi, and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and thank you for being here with me today. Also, thank you for being someone who cares about athletic fitness and athletic longevity and the ways in which we can accomplish those things. In fact, one of the ways that is most pronounced in my mind and in my work with all of my clients, friends, and people in my circle is really trying to use a health first model. And so if we can get healthy, everything that we do in training and sports and athletics and even life in general in the boardroom is enhanced to a greater degree. And so that's really what we are going to be talking about today, is using some dietary levers to enhance our health. And in fact, the title is most specifically, and will require some explanation, using the planet Earth based diet to reset your metabolism. And of course, as you know, if you're a regular listener, the we in this thing usually is me and my coach, my broach, PK.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am doing very well. I mean, I'm always excited to talk about health and fitness topics, to hang out with you, to do the pod. It's a triple win.
It is a triple win. And today's a special day. We're going to get into some stuff.
Yeah. And like, I thought about this before we came on. We thought, gosh, let's just talk. Let's be very unscripted and as tangential as we want. And I guess the only thing I want to say is from a coaching perspective, what I've learned, I think, to do, and certainly what I try to do, is not tell people what they need to do and try to drag them kicking and screaming towards a path of behavior change that might not be successful. Instead, why not just open the gates to let them go where they need to go to get what they want?
Right. I mean, I think, and you and I, we've chopped this up on the pod and just as we've chatted, of course, when we're not recording, but that task of trying to compel or force or even inspire is a thankless and fruitless really pursuit. But I love what you just said, because that's really just like, if someone's motivated, if they're asking for help, then you're trying to say, here's how you do it.
Yep. And you know, just trying to put some official nature to today's show.
Yeah.
I think I could say this, you know, like everything begins from a platform of health. And so, you know, in developing what my work, I've really come to learn that, okay, if we have this platform of lifelong health, which uses things like our movement and our sleep and ergonomics and food and awareness as a greater topic. Yes, we do that first, and then we can get into all this wonderful business with peak performance training and periodized cycles and fancy exercises, so forth and so on. And so why you and I think wanted to talk about this today was because there is a ground zero and there's a baseline, which is a metabolic reset. And you know, I've had some clients recently, some of the Training Tribe members, and you and I delving into this to a greater degree, and thus here we are.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and I think from my perspective, I think it was on a pod maybe a month ago now, you had mentioned metabolic dysfunction, dysregulation, and that being in a staggering percentage. I think you said 70% of Americans are having some form of metabolic dysregulation. And so that piqued the curiosity just in the recesses of my mind. And then, you know, you had some, basically you had some questions from clients, and then you and I started talking about this. And we just said, you know, it was right at the tail end of February. We're just, you know, you said to me, this is my idea. And I said, I'm in. And then we both just did it. And so what's kind of interesting about today from my perspective is that you and I, you're going to lay out your program, and then you and I are going to be able to discuss what our experiences were, sort of like firsthand. And this is fresh because we just finished March. We're recording April 1st. And so this is exciting stuff. And in that way, it really is, it's a fun recap. And so anyway, I think that why don't you start just by laying out, you know, what what is that when you start talking about a metabolic reset, and how did we get to this program that we actually just executed?
And in my usual long-winded fashion, I will first of all thank you for the opportunity to do that. And if I say that I want to talk very briefly about metabolic flexibility and hormone balance, but in getting to that, I should probably just talk about the PBD. And I came up with this a number of years ago. I started using some models with my clients. And yes, it is a play on words. It's kind of a spin, because we have so much information today about eating the plant-based diet. And I feel that the planet Earth, again, I just try to be clear so in case I'm stumbling with my words, audio quality for someone. That's a different model, because it looks at the human as an omnivore, not an herbivore, an omnivore.
Right.
And by that, meaning we have the capacity to be both somewhat carnivorous, actually quite a bit of that, and somewhat herbivorous. We can extract nutrition from a variety of animal and plant-based sources. And so, getting away from all the arguments that exist, it just made common ancestral sense to say we need to eat from planet Earth, and it really does include both kingdoms to some degree. And I think we've got to stop the infighting, first of all. But in carrying on with that, then I said, well, okay, this is a somewhat ancestrally consistent model that still takes use of modern food availability, processing, if you want that in quotations. But ultimately, finally, now we get to this point. Well, what can happen? And it happened to me, multiple times through this journey, is you can be cruising along and feeling pretty good, decent, maybe performing adequately, but maybe not fantastic, and words like great and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know it. And what usually happens is because there's an infiltration of some of these modern foods and processed foods to the point where it starts to dysregulate our metabolisms. It takes a longer time for that to really start wrecking health, maybe even decades in many cases. But catching that and tuning it up, especially like now going through into spring and summer, maybe having goals, I feel like for me, having a really highly functioning metabolism is going to be beneficial, whereas I may not have been as well equipped had I not done the reset.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree with you. And I'll take it a step further. For me, like when this came up in our conversations and then we started talking about this reset, I was like, yeah, I need that. I think that, just personally, I think that my program got pretty loose, and I was putting a bunch of garbage in my body and feeling the effects of it. I think that I just wasn't feeling that good. So when we talked about a reset and when we got further into the details about, it is an overall health reset, but it's based around really healing the metabolism. And I'm using the word healing. I know you're not, but I just kind of felt like my body was out of whack. And so, I mean, it wasn't even something that sort of crept in. I kind of knew it was happening. And at the same time, didn't exactly know how to go about fixing it until you laid out this plan. And that's why I think that I was excited to give it a shot before we even embarked.
Yeah. And I was thinking as you were talking there, heal is the same thing I was saying. I was just putting TH on the end of it. And really that is, health is healing and it's restoring. And so I have a story that I'd like to tell that prefaces how this came about to an even further degree. So, almost a decade ago, I had been cruising along through life, and I've told this story in different parts before, but, I was eating a relatively healthy diet in some sort of quotations, but I was also consuming some processed foods and dabbling in the standard American diet. And I had noticed that, I'd put on some weight, not the good kind. You know, some of my metabolic markers, like my blood pressure, my my fasting glucose, were going up. And I at that time I wasn't feeling my best, even though I was like training every day. And I was like, huh. So then I really went on a crusade and cleaned up my eating and adjusted some of my training behaviors and lifestyle. And man, I really got healthy and fit and felt great. And that was going along for quite a while. Well, then in the mid 2017s, mid 20 teens, I decided I want to try this ketogenic diet. I want to kind of mess around with that. And so I looked at some different models that were available. And, you know, I was, found like, oh, here's a model that I think I can do. And I did. And at first when I did it, it was quite interesting because I got leaner and I felt great. And one of the things about this, when anyone does a ketogenic diet, is ironically, you're eating more fat, but it starts to get very easy to constrict or reduce calories and do some fasting because you're just not hungry. It's a very appetite suppressing type of diet. So it was very successful in just tuning up those last final things for me. Mm-hmm. Where I made the mistake, it was a big mistake, was I did it long-term when I shouldn't have. I did it for about a year and a half. And it's like many things, there's a bell-shaped curve. It works till it doesn't work. And so one day I noticed it was, actually, I believe it was the fall, late fall, early winter of 2017. And I was like, man, I'm shredded, man. I mean, I got my body fat down to about 7%, but unfortunately, along with that, I lost some muscle mass. And right. I was like, you know what? I still feel pretty good, but I don't like where this is going. And I'm already a fairly lean person. And, you know, pretty soon I'm going to be 60 and I don't want to go into this thing as an emaciated, sarcopenic, frail, elderly person, which, you know, I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but sure. Okay. I'm not doing that. So then I went on a reversal. It's like, okay, how can you gain lean body mass, adjusting diet, adjusting training, because this became my number one priority for a couple of years. And to some extent I was successful with that because I gained back 30 pounds and, unfortunately, wow. I'm not a Dorian Yates mass monster, probably, half of that weight was fat. Maybe not half, but probably if I gained over several years 20 pounds of muscle, I easily gained 10 pounds of fat with it. And so then I was like, okay, you're making a deal with the devil here, so you got to play it. And I was kind of careful, like I don't want to restrict too much because it's kind of easy for me to get lean, but I didn't want to see all the hard-fought muscle gains go away. Mm-hmm. So there I was, just 4 weeks ago saying, I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty healthy. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty fit, but I would like to tune up a little more, trim a bit without ballasting my lean body mass. And so when you and I started talking about it, it's like, hey, let's really dive into this more, more focused than perhaps either one of us had done in a couple of years. I was all in.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, I felt frankly shittier than you. And I was like, when you said, hey, this can be done, I'm like, let's do it. And then, just by comparison, I just interpreted that, you are a healthy, driven person. This is what you, do. And so I guess when we set out to do this, it was like, let's just kind of see what happens. And, for me, if we're really answering the question of why, I think that first and foremost, it was, throughout the last year, and there has been, obviously everyone has experienced the pandemic and the last year in their own way. But for me, it's been, sort of a little bit, obviously more solitary, but sort of, a little less care into the nutrition. Or maybe a lot less care in some cases, mm-hmm. and not as much consistent training. And I think that if you add all those things up, I was just feeling shitty. And so it was health more than anything. And I think that when we started talking about this, my goal was, I just want to feel better. And let's see let's really go after this and then see what happens after a month. And so if we're asking me why that was the main goal, there was obviously some benefits that we anticipated from like body comp or whatever, but for, it was just sort of a foundation of health. And in some ways, like by comparison, if we can get through the other side, how messed up was my metabolism? Because it just doesn't feel good in the moment, you know? So if we could get there and look back, and that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. And I should mention to every listener, there is a fairly lengthy post about the reset month option within the plant-based diet that just went out as an article on thelifetimeathlete.com. So if you, you know, want to have that as a reference, please by all means do, which also will allow me to blow through a couple of points because I think the storytelling is better for the podcast. But, you know, restoring or resetting good metabolic function is really getting the body to get, you know, lower inflammation levels and be very efficient or flexible, shall we say, at utilizing both fats and carbohydrates for fuel sources. And in the standard American diet, because we're so carb heavy, processed in particular, plus seed oils, we end up with these wrecked metabolisms that really lose fat burning ability and become very carb dependent. And so that's why sometimes when you reset, you have to do a hard reset and swing kind of almost into like a carnivorous keto model, which we did temporarily, again, not endorsing that super long term, because then it sets you back to midline where now you can bounce either way on those fuels. And you know, health, obviously metabolic health is health. You already covered that so well. I talked about how that supports performance because then everything takes better. Research substantiates longevity is better in healthy persons. And that's, you know, metabolic health in particular. And then finally, here's the one point I should bring up in this era that we're living in is immunity and immune function. And literally having a healthy metabolism and body composition significantly upgrades your immune function. So, you know, your immunity, innate and your ability to respond to pathogens and not produce a magnificent inflammatory cytokine storm is really critical. And so my thing is we do have a pandemic now, but the greater pandemic in existence is poor metabolic health throughout the world, as well as pathogens, which come and go.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was an interesting sort of byproduct of the overall health reset, because we did start talking about just the manifestation of being hard to kill. You know, we talk about that here, John, you promote that, but now we're literally talking about how can you be like a more durable beast to withstand things like, oh, I don't know, a global pandemic, right? And if you're healthier, if your metabolic flexibility is stronger, then you have more immunity against whatever it may be, in this case, just, you know, illness, a virus, and beyond. So that was another one of the, I'm not going to say happy accident for you, but for me, it was a realization of, like a tangible way to think about being hard to kill in the context of this, you know, 2021 snapshot that we're living, and how that does connect with the day to day. Cause sometimes it can be an idea that's a little bit, you know, like ethereal, or it's just an idea that you can't really sink your teeth into, manner of speaking. So I think that all those things were important to me. And let's get into it, John. Talk about how we did it and what you fleshed out for the PBD reset month. And just as you go through, I can add, but just kind of lay out what the program was and why.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any of this in front of me, but it's so fresh in my mind. I can just roll. And what we established was, if our goal is to reset metabolic health, we're going to make that the one goal and try to serve multiple masters and do this metabolic multitasking business. And so we said, okay, look, first of all, we need to have a base of animal products. And so, you know, that might be beef, lamb, game, pork, fish, chicken, although I think those are lesser in terms of nutrient density and also come with some potential quote unquote contaminants or toxins, but nonetheless, like, okay, let's make this thing sustainable for both you and I and for anybody else that wants to do it. So, you know, there is meat, and meat is life, meat heals. You know, thank you, Dr. Sean Baker, for that line. But nonetheless, we did that. So, okay, now what about fats? You know, people say, well, what are healthy fats? What aren't? So on this model, again, we're not taking it too far into debate, but like, okay, well, you can also have ghee, butter, tallow, lard, avocado oil, olive oil, coconut oil. We said, okay, let's name those that the research is fairly supportive of, but stay away from the evil triad, meaning the seed oils, and then also the processed grains and refined sugars. And so that was kind of, you know, we took out the evil triad, we made it kind of meat heavy, but then we said, okay, look, dairy should probably be out because you don't always know if you have a sensitivity, but we'll leave one thing in, which is heavy cream. Because for many of us, myself included, a splash of that in my morning coffee does make my day right. And so because heavy cream has, you know, it's mostly fat, it doesn't have the lactose or the casein proteins, it's not so much of an aggravator for most people. And then we said lots of water, lots of salt, and I should stop there for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you're hearing meat and you're saying, hey, I've got questions about that, go to the blog post. John will link to it, find it on the Lifetime Athlete. We're not going to get into this, you know, what if I am a vegan? We respect that, but just that's not what this we're talking about today. And I think that from my perspective as a sort of listening to you, John, I said, all right, you know, one of the questions I had is, hey, if we're going to do this reset, how would you do it? And you said, well, if you're really getting down to elimination diet, you'd go to beef, salt, and water. And of course, you know, I thought to myself, wait, that's it? And why? And what you explained to me is in its sort of, I guess, essential form. And, you know, if I butcher this a little bit, you can clean it up. But it's like, that's an elimination diet where, you know, very, very few, if not zero triggers in terms of nutrition. You get enough calories and fat and enough salt from that your body functions. And it's essentially just a, you know, an elimination diet. And that heals the metabolism. You get to train your metabolism to retrain your metabolism to burn fat. And you get off the cycle, the vicious cycle of carbs, right? And so at least initially I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, and since you and I are meat eaters, we thought we can give that a shot. And then as we sort of were discussing this, you started to strategically add things in to not only make it sustainable, but practical in terms of how are we gonna cook the meats, you know, and what else are we gonna fuel up on as we think about making this last a month? So I think that, that was my experience, just man on the street style. And I would say that, you know, keep going on with where we landed with this.
Yeah. And a month isn't that long of a time. And I guess the way we did it, it was easy. I mean, I'm just going to say it was not difficult at all. And so then we said, okay, what about eggs? You know, so you and I, we don't have any allergic issues to eggs and we really enjoy eating them. So let's add eggs in there too. A great, you know, one of nature's greatest foods. So we put that in. And then I started to think about, okay, now how can we be ancestrally consistent? How can we keep this thing sustainable, have some variety, and also, you know, make it work the best. And so I said, okay, let's have a strategic refeed meal or two each week where, you know, probably in the evening over a dinner period, you're going to have a carb injection with that meal. Not a ton, maybe as much as 100 grams, but that's not super excessive for a healthy active person. And we took it from what we were calling like fruit-based vegetables or anyway, vegetables that are really fruits. And so some of those things included avocados, olives, squash, cucumbers, pumpkin, you know, peeled and seeded. And those kind of things have been shown to be very easily digested and non-allergenic to most people. We added sweet potatoes peeled and that really was something that I found, oh, okay, I enjoyed it. I, you know, occasionally I'd be looking forward to that, and then having that does some things for you. It mentally, it says, okay, I'm still getting some carbs, I'm getting some color, different taste, texture, things. That's important for the palate. You know, you don't want palate fatigue. And then also that little bit of a, like a glycogen refueling kind of helps with maintaining a good insulin function, metabolic flexibility. So yeah, we were mostly staying keto. And in your case, you've got the data because you tracked ketones every single morning. And that was the next addition was those strategic refeed meals with the fruit-based carbs.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's mostly meat-centric. You and I added eggs because we don't have allergies to that. We have the strategic refeed of the carbs that are friendly, natural, and the research shows that they're not allergen, they're not like triggers, as you said. But John, I think some people are going to be asking, well, hey, John, you're leaving some stuff out that's good for you, like seeds and nuts, and dairy can work. So talk to me, just sort of broadly paint a picture of why, or, you know, things like the things that we eliminated and why, and how they can be triggers and disrupt a reset of the metabolism anywhere from, you know, you've got your vegetables, leafy greens, down to alcohol. Talk to the listeners about why we cut those out.
Oh man, that was a lot. And
I know. We can tackle those one-on-one if you want, or you can just talk about it broadly.
Yeah. So again, I'm thinking ancestrally, first of all, and what we know, I think what we have pretty good data on is humans do well eating meat and fruit. This is, fruit is kind of the part of the plant that, quote unquote, the plant wants you to eat, you know, when it's ripe to, you know, pass the seeds on. And so, you know, fruit generally has less of these, quote unquote, plant defense mechanisms like lectins and phytates and even oxalates, which you'll find in other foods. So I thought, well, we just don't want to have a risk, because if you have any type of brain fog, achy joints, fatigue, skin rash, eczema, psoriasis, allergies, something environmentally is irritating you. And most of the time it's something you're ingesting. And also the research really points to it's probably these plant compounds. And so let's get those out of there. Same for grains, which are actually seeds of the plant, which, you know, they don't really want you to eat at the way that we consume those. And they're just known to be problematic. You know, obviously, like, you can look to gluten or something, but there's way more than just gluten. And so it's okay, let's just get those out of there for a while, at least. You can always debate with a lot of these things. Well, if you cook them in certain ways, especially like if you cook the heck out of them, as in, you know, pressure cooking, whatever, whether you're talking about some of the grains which you might ferment and soak and sprout, or beans that you might, you know, pressure cook. Yeah, you can do that. So that makes them more digestible, but it doesn't make them optimal foods anyway. And so, okay, let's just get them off. You know, it's not going to be that difficult for a month. And here's another thing that's ultimately going to be part of the whole plant-based diet book, which I don't know when I'm going to get that done, because we got another book we're working on right now, but it's the baby test. And so I kind of have these like light bulb things happen for me in these observations. It's like, you know, if you take a baby and, you know, when you're just, you know, introducing solid foods or pureed foods, they'll eat the meat. They will eat fruit. They'll eat like a mashed sweet potato. They will spit out broccoli, kale, spinach, even some of the grain things if they don't have sugars added to them. It's just the baby test. It works every time. And so instead of saying, well, we have this randomized controlled clinical trial that's double blinded, no, we have billions and billions of actual experiences that humans are instinctively wired to like to eat meat and fruit and spit everything else out.
Right. Right. And so that's obviously, you laid that out. It's like, all right, that makes sense. You know, and we're not overthinking it here either. And it's for a month, right? So in addition to those, you know, vegetables, fruits, and grains that can be quote unquote considered healthy, you know, not arguing that now, but also what this eliminated for us was sugar, processed foods, because we cooked everything, and the seed oils that you talked about. And so I think that anything else we need to talk about, what we cut out before we just dive in and, you know, we've set the table. Now we're going to talk about what happened, right?
Yeah, I think that was good enough. And like you said, I think that blog post, I don't know how many pages it is, but it's not that long of a read, but it does kind of touch on some of those things to provide a better explanation.
Yeah, so go check it out if you're curious and get all the details. But I mean, John, okay, here's the big reveal. It was crazy, people. What happened was nuts. That's my expert opinion. John, what was your experience?
Yeah, very positive, I should say. And so, you know, and there's a few more things we did.
Yep.
In addition to just the basic dietary plan that we just laid out, I probably should mention one of them was that we looked very casually at time-restricted feeding, and we said, okay, look, let's keep it at 2 to 3 meals per day, and let's keep the eating window, you know, 8 hours or less. So like eating between 9 and 5 or something like that. And that, so that very gentle, easy to do, you don't, there's no problem with that. We also emphasized, you know, consuming a lot of salt, and the blog post tells you about what happens with hormones and your kidneys. You know, when you restrict carbs, you sometimes need more salt to offset that. And yes, we did those things. But anyway, you asked me about my results, which were quite good. I managed to lose 6 pounds in a month, which is good. You know, good for me. It was, I think most of that was body fat. There may have been a small amount of visceral fat, you know, which is the bad fat packed into my organs, and some of that was subcutaneous around the old gut. And I think now I have more like abs instead of flabs. And but the thing I noticed, honestly, the most was going from feeling pretty good to feeling outstanding. And so I could wake up and it's like, man, I have a clarity and an energy, and less, I don't have a lot of inflammation anyway, but I was having less of it. And I was like, oh, I can feel this. This is, it's freaking amazing. And, you know, very quickly for me, it became like, you know, that I've had this discussion with myself before, but man, feeling fantastic is a way better experience than any joy I might get from eating chips. Let's just say it, you know, even though those things, you know, modern engineered foods, to which as an American, I'm probably addicted to, but I don't eat them very often. I'm now inclined to want to eat them less because I just love feeling so good.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, let's just say objectively, I was in worse shape. My bod was, you know, in jankier condition when we embarked on this. I had the same experience as you just described, where it really, and it took, I would say, you know, about 10 days in, both you and I, you know, at that point, definitely ketosis had happened, because like you said, I was tracking my ketones, and you know, the ketones spiked, ketosis was happening legitimately. We both were like, man, I'm feeling great. And it was, it really was like an experience, like fog lifting, and things were clear. Not in the clarity of thinking, but just the experience with the body. Like, I had gotten used to driving a machine that I was putting gasoline with water in it. But I'd gotten used to that sort of chugging along. And so, yeah, you and I were just like, wow, this is really something. And I think that was the experience. Because when we set out, we're like, okay, our goal was at the end of the month, we just want to feel great. Can we reset the metabolism and get everything sort of rowing in the same direction in the body? You know, my experience as well. Yeah, man, I had more pounds to drop than you. So I lost a little bit more. I got into the you know, double digits there. I think also I lost some of the visceral fat, which if you're listening and you don't have a mental image, do this, because I did. Just do a Google search for visceral fat and you'll see some medical illustrations that will scare the shit out of you, you know? And I mean, literally, like, check it out, because there's a constriction in your organs. You guys know, if you're listening, I'm just a man on the street. I'm not an expert, so I don't, you know, John and I had talked about it a lot, but I hadn't connected the dots. But it's like, okay, you know, the before and after experience of kind of having your organs constricted versus just as simple as a couple weeks later, feeling more movement and less constriction, you're like, wow, there was some bad stuff happening behind the scenes. And so all that is to say, we got about halfway through the month. We're like, I'm feeling great because of the type of food and the you know, the calorically dense food that we were eating. It really was not a challenge. It was actually a joy to experience it because you were getting rewarded with how good you were feeling. And that happened is like in under 2 weeks, the body is just an amazing thing where it works quickly if you give it the right, you know, if you remove the obstacles to feeling good.
Yeah. I mean, I love what you said. I agree 100%. I don't want to say too much more because I think you hit that, but yeah, just feeling amazing, not difficult at all, easy, rewarding, enjoyable. I think we came up with something where, okay, look, you know, we were really just trying to get that good feeling and restore the metabolic
right,
health.
Right.
And we did it, and it happened within days, which is so amazing. And I've seen this a lot with the clients that I work with. Well, anybody who can buy into a system like this, isn't the only way, it's a good way. And just stay relatively consistent. Yeah. You're going to get results up so fast. Cause people will ask, well, how long is this going to take me, you know, months and months? And no, actually, you know, you can get some really significant improvement in how you're feeling and functioning in just a couple of weeks. And so powerful, PK, what you're talking about there. And what I would probably go back to then and say is, okay, as lifetime athletes, you know, I assume, you know, which I should be assuming, a lifetime athlete trains almost every day. Mm-hmm. And so again, that's scalable. That can be at any number of levels with any number of goals to fit your body type, where you're at, but we're training. And so one of the things we did was just like, okay, look, we want to make this thing as sustainable as possible. So let's do a fruit shoot. And so what the fruit shoot was, was, okay, once or twice a week, you're going to probably be doing a workout that has some intensity in it and some duration. And that's a good workout in which to literally inject a bit of carbohydrate. And so how I designed the fruit shoot was like, okay, you have a small serving of fruit, just about any fruit that you want, actually. And you do it intra-workout. So after you've completed your warm-up, and then before you do the most intense things, maybe you have a half a banana or even like a tablespoon of honey, believe it or not. And what that does is, you know, it kind of, you know, gives you another exposure to carbohydrate in your diet, but without consequence. So instead of smashing a bag of chips on the couch, if you're having a small amount coming in during exercise, you really have a very limited insulin response, and the transporters on the muscle cells will rapidly take that up, and you just use it. You just burn it as fuel. And so I thought that was kind of fun, but it also was effective in terms of doing the fruit shoot. So we had that in there.
Yeah. And I can say that I added the fruit shoot the second 2 weeks, or I should say the last half of the month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because in some ways you and I were, you know, you were doing a little bit of adding things in real time, John, as you're experiencing, which was so fun to do. Plus, we'll talk about how we were partners in crime in just a second after we get through the fruit shoot. But it is incredible. I opted for the spoonful of honey just because that was the easiest. And it's well, first of all, it's crazy how delicious it is when you have no other sugar mm-hmm. in any way in your life. And second of all, there was a real tangible effect of, especially when you're going for the hard workout, it really worked. And it was just awesome. And so I think that was a, you know, we're assuming that you're going to be doing some training. We're assuming that a couple times a week, you're going to be getting a tough workout. You know, we're talking strength training, and you're going to be sweating and be using those muscles. And I can say the proof is in the pudding because the workouts were great. And there were no, and I can say this because I was tracking my ketones, there were no adverse effects on ketosis, right? So mm-hmm. we know that we put that good, healthy carb in, and it just got burned up because it was used right away.
Yeah. And that's really an interesting topic that I've kind of I've come full circle on, because when you look at fruit, if fruit is consumed in moderation in the athlete, well, now we have, it's a useful carb source. Now, if you say, what about consuming either a lot of fruit or high fructose corn syrup in the case of a diabetic? Not such a good idea, you know? And so everything has to be taken in context, but
sure.
You know, that, you know, our N of two is really proof. Oh, this is good. And actually I took that from other research. So, you know, it's not like totally out of my A, but this, you know, kind of gets me thinking about, well, you know, you talk about fructose metabolism, and yeah. I mentioned how, you know, that's really, you know, looked at as a no-no, but it's more of a bell-shaped curve. And again, that gets to this common sense thing that I always, wonder about. And so I was a vegetable pusher. I don't think I killed anybody, but I used to believe really that, and was taught this, man, you just can't eat too many of these green vegetables, you know, and so if you have raw broccoli, kale, and spinach, you know, it's just so darn good for you. Well, then I started to say, well, why does it taste like crap? And no green smoothie tastes good unless you add a bunch of other stuff and sweeteners to it. So it, I mean, you can't make that lie. And so I started to look at some of the research and some of what the thought leaders were saying. I said, gosh, you know, the green smoothie is just, it's a concentration of anti-nutrients to some extent. And so I'm like, ah, you know, we're not having that. But then that fruit has that more natural, benign effect. And so just wanted to kind of say, you know, the whole non-starchy green vegetable model, which you can do it with some success for some amount of time, because I don't think it's as good as fruit shooting.
Right. And I think that's just something to sort of test your preconceived notions on for me, where it's like, hey, you know, this is the green smoothie has to, it's disgusting, you know, it doesn't taste delicious, in my opinion, and it has to be good for you because it's all that natural stuff. And I think that, you know, you've really illustrated where it can be an inflammatory trigger. And, you know, I just think that sort of challenging some of those preconceived notions and seeing what the results are what we did, you know? And John, I also want to talk about, if you're thinking about this, if you're kicking around, maybe giving it a shot, I would highly suggest doing it with a partner, having a partner in crime, you know? And the reason I say it is, when you and I embarked on this, we're like, okay, let's do it. We had a chance to share our experiences, check in. We texted almost every morning while we were doing it. Not as an obligation, but just to share our experience. And there's some weird stuff, you know, that happened, right? And maybe even funny. Like, two things I'll bring up. One, you end up peeing a lot. And so I'm just like, so you and I are checking in. I'm like, man, this is unusual. And you're like, yes, you know, and you explain that, right? And then the second thing, and I want you to explain both of these, like, technically. Okay. And the second thing is, John, this is about 5 days in. I'm like, John, I am sweating. I'm sweating my ass off here. What's going on? And you're like, dude, you got the meat sweats, man. And in a legitimate way, you explain thermogenesis, what's happening in the body. And I was like, wow, I just thought the meat sweats were something we joked about when, you know, you go out to a big steak dinner. But no, it's real. And so those are just two of our examples of, if you're going on this experience with someone else, then you can kind of help put your personal sort of moments into context and just ask the other person. And we certainly had that. So why don't you explain what the deal is with both the peeing and then with the meat sweats?
Yes, absolutely. So with those meat sweats, it's really, as you indicated, it's known as the thermic effect of food, or what is called dietary induced thermogenesis. And so in breaking down protein and digesting protein, it's something that our metabolism just puts off more heat. And so you'll actually see a slight raise in temperature and perspiration. And So there is, the meat sweats are real. Now everything in the body adapts and accommodates. So it tends to calm down and fade out over time. But you know, that first like week or two, you know, when the body is quote unquote resetting and making change back to ideal or normal, I want to say that, away from crappy. You know, you might have some meat sweats as your body readapts to eating its ancestrally consistent species appropriate diet. Woo. Now there's a concept. So that's what the meat sweats are. And again, they're normal and transient. And then the urinary frequency is another great signal that the body is making things right.
Yeah.
And so I was having a wonderful conversation yesterday with a client about this topic. And basically the salt comes into the picture here too. So we know that, you know, the kidneys are really the organ of filtration and they're that's where our urinary output is coming from. So the kidneys are actually resetting because you're balancing hormones. And so by lowering the carbohydrate content in the diet, what you're accomplishing is you're lowering your levels of insulin, circulating insulin. And insulin acts on the kidneys. It communicates with other hormones, and including aldosterone and antidiuretic hormone. And you can always look these up to go deeper, but basically you're turning the switch back on for normal kidney function. So you're telling the kidneys, we don't need excess sodium and blood plasma and blood pressure in this beast. So just any sodium that is in here that looks excessive, just excrete it. And so you're excreting the sodium also at the very same time as you're getting rid of inflammatory residues and water retention. All that's just going out. Right. And that's why, of course, when you see people who say, oh, you know, I tried an elimination diet like this or a quote unquote keto diet and it didn't work for me. And I got really fatigued and had headaches and stuff. So you got too low on sodium, because in the few weeks that your body takes to adjust, especially if you're exercising, you're gonna run low because you're excreting so much, getting rid of that. And so having a little bit of extra dietary intake as an offsetter is a good thing because it normalizes you. And so I went long on that and I apologize, but yeah, that's kind of what's going on. And so it's really interesting when we look at blood pressure as a medical situation, and it is, and you know, you should work with your health care provider and all of those things are true, but much of what has been termed sodium sensitive hypertension is because of eating a standard American diet, which is high in processed carbs, because basically you've blocked the ability for the body to regulate sodium and excrete it. So you don't want to take in more sodium when you're already retaining it. And that makes some sense. But if we change up the diet, many people benefit from added salt in the diet then, and also may, again, with the help of their healthcare provider, be able to go off medication for blood pressure. And it seems so simple, but it is true.
Right. Well, and I can also say in both of those, the meat sweats and the, you know, the urinary peeing frequently, that was just kind of like for a window of time in week two. And then your body does sort of balance that out. At least both you and I experienced that. And so I think that it was just fascinating. And, you know, your comment about the salt, that was like a very tangible thing. It's like, hey, you know, what do you think's going on? I think I had a day that was kind of low energy. Mm-hmm. And you said, hey, try adding the salt in. And it worked. It really was like a before and after sort of experience there. And so again, I'm not a sort of learned in this area. I'm just recounting my experience. And it was just, it really was tangible to make that change. And then since then, just continuing to incorporate that, still getting the success and the energy. It really does seem like that was the case with the salt for sure.
Yeah. And I would just come back to what you talked about earlier, you know, having a partner in this, or a team,
right,
a support network. It's fun. It's so fun to compare your results and discuss things. And that's obviously well known in, you know, in psychology and performance. It's like, if you have people who are, you know, like-minded and supporting, and you're a part of a team or a tribe, and you're pursuing this thing, it's going to work so much better. And so I really recommend for anyone who's going to do this, hey, don't go it alone, because you don't have to. Bring others down the path of excellence with you. And another part of how the plant-based diet works is, when you think of time of year, we apply a seasonality model to both our training and our eating, you know, at the Lifetime Athlete. And it works best to do these resets at times of the year when you're not necessarily training intensely or in a competitive phase, but also through the winter and into the spring, because ancestrally those times would be consistent with low food availability, low carbohydrate availability. So it works perfectly to reset then. Although I would say, if you need it, any time is the right time.
Yeah, it just seemed to be good timing for us as well. Spring, we're sort of looking around the corner at summer here in Southwest Montana. And, you know, it obviously, no time is as good as the present. But it also, just for the time of year, it seemed like it felt right too.
Yep. And that takes us to kind of getting close to the wrap up on this.
Yeah.
Once you've reset, then there becomes this thing called maintenance.
Yeah, and we've talked about that briefly. You know, we're probably going to cover it in more detail, but, you know, what are you thinking?
Well, I would say this, that as our outcomes indicate, and that of many of other people that I've worked with, and then in our global community, it doesn't take forever to do this reset, maybe only a month in most cases, or a couple of months for a person that might need to do that. But after that, I don't think we have to be quite as stringent, because now, having restored the health and the metabolic flexibility, you can get away with a little bit of transgression as long as you watch out for the slippery slope. And so in saying that, you know, we might say, which I do with folks all the time, so, well, let's add back in some things. You know, first of all, can we adjust macros if you have a reason to do that? Sure, you can do that and should. You know, for others, it's like, well, you know, the gluten-free grains, I kind of like those. I want to bring those in. So, okay, so we look at oatmeal. How do you do with that? It's pretty high fiber. So some people, yes, some people, no. How about white rice? It's fairly benign. You know, what's your glucose response to it? Okay, yep, we can do that. Some people say, oh man, you know, I can't make it through this life without the bread. And you say, well, what if you had like the occasional sprouted grain or fermented sourdough bread, and that's where you're getting your bread from? So, you know, you're not getting as many of those issues. Yes, you can do it. And so I think that's really important to say, it's an experiment of one, and it's ongoing. And so you find the things that work to keep you looking, feeling, and performing your best. And then also have that understanding that, you know, the John Boy of today is not going to be the same in a year from now. Things might be different. I don't know what they are yet, but I may have to tweak it a little bit to, again, keep things optimal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that all that is, not only, I think, are you talking about sort of nutritionally and evolutionarily, but just like practically and mentally. We've talked about emotionally, you know, sort of what it means to go into the next phase, the maintenance, the month two of this journey that we're on. And that's an important component as well. The one thing that makes it, I think, for me really positive is that this is a springboard. It's just so tangible, feeling good, that it's easy to conceptualize, and it doesn't feel like sacrifice. In other words, it really feels like building and adding more than restricting.
Yeah, all gain, no pain. You're like a Lifetime Athlete ninja, roundhouse kicking it to the face.
Nice. Well, John, wrap it up. Any parting comments today? You know, questions, certainly you can hit John up, but any other thoughts?
Yeah, I'll just keep it brief. And of course, thank you, PK, and thank the listeners. But if you think you need some help in doing this, resetting the metabolism, fine-tuning your diet to get your health at a great baseline, then going further into fitness and athletic performance, you might want to work with me as a coach or work with someone else who is equally competent or maybe more so. But anyway, that's just a suggestion there. And, you know, if you're interested in working with me and you think that I can help you and I think I can help you, just check out what's available under coaching at thelifetimeathlete.com and have a great day.
Adios, everyone.